Great, welcome. Now it's my pleasure to introduce Xuxa Colte. Xuxa began her academic library career as a reference librarian at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, and then she became coordinator of electronic reference services there. She came to Cornell University Library in 93 as coordinator of Centers for Public Access to the Electronic Library in Mann Library. She moved on to two other positions in Mann. First, she was numeric files and multimedia librarian and electronic projects coordinator. In 1999, she became CUL's coordinator of electronic publishing, and among other activities, she started our Project Euclid program in that position. She spent 4 years as acting engineering librarian, and now she is our special projects librarian. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Xuxa, who will introduce the rest of the panel.
Thank you so much, Jean, both for the introduction and the cheerleading at the end. So what I'm going to do is continue in this vein with the introductions about who are we and why are we here. The why question, the why are we here, is actually the harder one to answer. So I'm going to attack that one first, because it's hard to answer because it kind of depends on which day you ask us that question. On some days, we think we're here because we're great visionaries, and we have this clairvoyance to share with you all and find the promised land and lead us all to there. And then again, then there are the days when we are convinced that we were handpicked for an entirely different reason into the vision team. So I'll let you guess which kind of day it was when the group selected me to do this presentation for you. So that was the why, and now comes the who. Who are we? This is the easy part. The names that you see on the screen are the original Vision Team members: Adam Chandler, Michael Cook, Marty Kerr, Cornelia, and I were on that group. And Carla was kind enough to be our resident designer. The current vision team is sort of the implementation team, the doers. And that's a much longer list of names. I'm going to give you a minute to read the names. We are so grateful to all these wonderful people for lending their time, skills, energy, and enthusiasm to this initiative. The names in yellow are the ones who are responsible for specific aspects of the project. But we'll come back to that a little bit later. So after the introductions, let me back up to the beginning of the story. And the story starts with a charge. In February, the first vision team was constituted, and the charge was given to us to present a compelling vision and pragmatic first steps about how to present CUL, how CUL should present itself and the information infrastructure landscape on the web. One very important thing in the charge was the need for us to understand the information seeking and management needs and behaviors of Cornell faculty and students, our audience, whether they are our users currently or not. We were told to be pragmatic, that this was not a blue sky group, contrary to what the background color seems to say here. That we had to be clever adapters of technologies that were successfully used elsewhere already, instead of dreaming of development projects. We were told to emphasize people and services, and that one thing was totally non-negotiable: Voyager as an LMS has to stay in the background. And we were also told that the figuring out transparencies between the Ithaca and the medical campuses were important. And this is how we saw that charge. The need to understand the audience was really paramount, we thought, because that's the only way we could avoid making decisions based on ourselves, which, after all, is actually a natural human tendency. I mean, how many times have we all given presents, gifts to others that really had a lot more to do with what we would like to receive as a gift from others than what it is that they would like or need? And while gifts, you know, that it's really the thought that counts, we are told, that's really not the case with web services. We really have to know what it is that people actually need. So how do you do that? How do you get to know these things? Anthropological research is sort of the buzzwords these days, and that's really a wonderful way to go about it. The only problem is that it's a huge big deal. It takes a lot of effort, it takes a lot of time, and these were things that we really didn't have time for. Our timeline was quite truncated from February to July, so we certainly could not fit anything like that in there. There are anthropological research projects done elsewhere, so we certainly wanted to make sure we looked at the results of those, but we had this nagging little voice in the back of our minds. Are those things really relevant to us? How can we be sure they are? The other thing we had already there for us to look at was existing data from CUL about users. They tend to be quantitative data, things like LibQual. We looked at things like click statistics from the gateway. We looked at things like LibGateway-L traffic. We looked at things like survey results and focus group results from demand library website re-envisioning. So that was all really good, relevant data. But we also wanted to make sure that we actually talked to Cornellians, that we could sit down with some and have an in-depth conversation. The question there was, okay, but how do we structure that, and how do we synthesize the results? So what we felt we needed was qualitative data, some way that we can segment the population based on not our assumptions, but the actual findings, and a way to synthesize the data in a way that it was easy to communicate, easy to relate to, easy to develop empathy for, and easy to act on. So what we felt we needed were imaginary friends. Imaginary friends who could tell the story of our audience, who could tell us about their background, their circumstances, their attitudes, behaviors, frustrations, expectations, luxuries, comforts, necessities, all those kinds of things. Friends who would lend us their shoes for us to try them on so we could relate to them better. So these friends are really personas. Personas are basically character sketches that represent a segment of a population. Or here's a quote from Steve Mulder and Ziv Yar, who wrote the book that was kind of our Bible throughout this phase of the project. The personas summarize user research findings and bring that research to life in such a way that a company can make decisions based on these personas, not based on themselves or a library. So our persona process was like this. We still didn't have enough time to do even this ourselves. So we got ourselves a consultant, Craig St. Clair of TKG Consulting, who had done this kind of work before for Circe Dynex, an LMS vendor. As I mentioned, this is all qualitative research. It was based on 36 interviews. These interviews were spread out very nicely, evenly, among disciplines, among status, so faculty, grad students, undergrads, among colleges. The interview protocol that we developed really probed very hard at work habits, work goals, and needs. One thing that we really wanted to do is make sure that we talk to both users and non-users. And that actually turned out to be quite a challenge for two reasons. One is it's always easier to find volunteers who are your friends. But also unexpectedly, it proved quite difficult to tell who was a user and who wasn't. I'm thinking of the person who said, oh yeah, I use your library all the time, I'm there all the time, but then it turns out that the activities had absolutely nothing to do with sort of the intellectual content, the intellectual community that the library is. It was more of a facilities kind of thing, versus the person who said, oh, you don't want to talk to me, I haven't stepped in a library for 15 years. And after I told him how wonderful that was, that's exactly the kind of person we wanted to talk to, it turned out that he uses our electronic resources all the time, the delivery services all the time, and reference services via email all the time. So the whole persona process ended up producing 10 imaginary friends. And the findings really validated the user research that was done elsewhere and through different venues at Cornell, but also supplemented it with some new findings and really amplified a lot of the themes that were there already. So we're very happy that we undertook this. They anchored our thinking throughout the process. We were very, very disciplined about always coming back to these personas when we brainstormed, when we evaluated systems. Yes, that's a cool idea, but is that going to help Ken and Marilyn? So it was a constant reality check for us. They are available for anyone's use on eCommons. There's the URL for you. They are your friends too, so please visit them, please use them. And that, I promise, is the end of my plug for the personas. So based on this three-prong approach to discovering audience needs, this next slide is really the very, very tiny nutshell version of what we identified as major themes. One thing, delivery seems to be a much bigger frustration for the users than discovery. It only makes sense. You know what you're not getting with delivery. With discovery, you don't know what you're missing. And chances are you're getting something else anyway. Reducing the number of starting points for discovery is very important because of the fragmented nature of the information landscape. People don't really know the breadth and depth of the options. They don't really know where to go. And so what do? They turn to their trusted networks. They turn to their friends, their TAs, their professors, their colleagues, and get suggestions on where to go. And of course, a lot of these things are inside the library walls, per se. Others are not. Brand recognition is huge. So really, the acknowledging the fact of life, that trusted networks and brand recognition is how people get to the information, we really can't fight that anymore. So we should just somehow capitalize on that. We need to link to the library from outside the library places where users are. Once again, brand recognition works not just inside but also outside the library. By the way, the biggest library brand seems to be JSTOR. You will not believe how many of our interviewees mention it, whether it has relevance to their field or not. Another big theme, I mean, how many years have we in the profession been talking about the fact that access trumps ownership? The users know that too. At this point, they say, show us the world. We don't really care about what's here. We just want to get it. So obviously, pairing that with a good delivery structure is the way to go. presenting a slice of the universe by subject, I think this was probably the major finding of the man focus groups that was done for the website. Surprise, surprise, only simple and quick works. People don't have the time, energy, patience, what have you, to jump through hoops for better stuff when good enough or almost good enough is so easy. And this was actually somewhat of a surprise to us. Better emphasis on awareness and outreach was something that we heard from several users. I think the last few years, some of us have been thinking that the library website should really be a tool for discovery and services, and somewhat resented the pressure to also turn it into a PR and communication tool. It just seemed like such a kind of administrative add-on, such a political thing. Well, it's not. Users talk about that need. So based on all these findings, here's the vision. CUL has a streamlined homepage, uncluttered, clean, that's built around accomplishing key tasks, not around showing a full menu of all the available things that the institution has to offer. Users, when they click on links, we're actually looking at those as votes for what to maintain and what to feature. There's a single search box that users can come to search a very big diversity of information. And the huge complexity of all of that is being handled through post-search faceting and visual clustering as tools for that develop and mature. Locally created digital content is part of the same discovery flow for maximum effect. Delivery services and other services are all seamlessly integrated into the discovery path. We break out of the institutional silo and step away from the institution-centric OPEC. The website is also an eye-catching communication tool. We link to the most heavily used services only. The rest are either linked to from secondary and tertiary pages or are there for searching. There's no library jargon on the page and the site. The human element is very important, and that comes across in this environment through lots of different avenues, through content. So, for example, the kind of human-centric content that made Vivo so powerful on campus gets searched. Contact, the approachability of library staff is always there. And there are multiple opportunities for users to leave their mark. They are invited in multiple relevant places to advise others by adding suggestions, reviews, recommendations, as well as tagging content in ways that are meaningful to them, creating breadcrumb trails throughout the collection. The subject slice view of the library is there, easily approachable, be it librarians being very easily approachable throughout it all. Evaluation and development is constant, and the library shows up outside the library also. So that's the tiny nutshell version of the vision, after which what we did was started shopping around. And according to our charge, we wanted to see what existing technologies and products were out there that could help us accomplish and get closer to this goal. What we did in our evaluation is we really thought that a conceptual fit trumped everything, that we only wanted to look at things seriously or recommend things that had the same trajectory as what we were talking about. And we had actually one of those kind of myopic moments in there when we were almost swayed by the really wonderful, beautiful interface of a system. But then another day came, and we kind of went back to the realization that, well, it might be great and smooth and beautiful, but it's really keeping us in the institutional silo model, so it's really not for us. So conceptual fit trumped everything, and what we did was really sort of a high-level bird's-eye evaluation of these systems. What did we find? Well, we find nothing tried and true. Basically, everything that we looked at was either a beta or in some kind of a pilot implementation or not quite ready or maybe brand, you know, released just then. And that's just a fact of life. So at this point, you know, since our charge really called for identifying and suggesting things that were tried and true, we actually had a conversation, so do we stop here? And that's where the group unanimously said, no, this might be risky, riskier than what we're used to, but we do believe that standing still is even riskier. It really erodes how users view our relevance. So what were the recommendations that we came up with? First one, implement WorldCat Local for fall 2008. WorldCat Local is an OCLC not quite product that is in pilot implementation at the University of Washington. And that's really the only product out there that transcends the institutional silo approach. And that's why we went with that recommendation, fully realizing that, first of all, it's not quite ready. And also, it doesn't and probably will never have the kind of flexibility and exactness that we are used to with Voyager. When I say flexibility, I don't mean interface at all. So how we're seeing this is implement WorldCat Local as a public catalog interface, and we still envision Voyager in OPEC in the background as a staff interface available for staff for certain more advanced functions. Number two is kind of a longer story. Says maintain web feed-based find-it until WorldCat Local is ready to take over. So what does that mean? WorldCat Local is actually, the way they're thinking about their product is really, really wonderful and meshes very well with how we see our approach. One of the things that they're doing is they're trying to integrate as much licensed content, article content, right into the same database as possible to step beyond the technical limitations of federated searching that Findit has. And then, of course, you know, you get back a whole bunch of, a big complexity of results. They deal with that with post-search faceting. The issue is right now they only have about 45 million records in there, I think, which sounds like a big number, but if you contrast it with what's available through Findit and what a research library is used to, it's really not quite big enough. So that's why we're suggesting that Findit still has a place while WorldCat is adding content to that and also folding in their own federated search capability to access the rest of the world that they will never get contractual access to. So the third recommendation is to redesign the CUL website for fall 08. Fourth, implement Live Guides. Live Guides is another not totally fully baked product. that is an interactive way to produce subject-based library guides and also fold in a very kind of hip Web 2.0-ish library presence. We also suggested although this was kind of beyond our scope again, to investigate ways to insert the library into non-library spaces and discovery tools. And because delivery is such a big, big thing for our users, we wanted to encourage CUL to do anything it can to support the speedy implementation of the Get It goals. So will implementing these recommendations get us to the promised land, get us to the vision? When we put check marks next to these bullets, when we're done with those, will we be there yet? And really, is there a there? Well, we don't really think so. But we do think there is a right direction, and we believe it is important to head that way. You know what they say about life being more about the journey than the destination? I think we agree. The most important of all the recommendations because of that is the need for constant evaluation, constant enhancement, and constant visioning along the way. So that's the real nutshell version of the report. In the summer, we went to LMT and the executive committees, and they said, just do it. So that's where the implementation team got put together. And we ended up with really four pretty distinct projects to deal with. So the people who are responsible for these separate projects, Adam is the WorldCat local guy, Cornelia, is the website redesign lady, I guess. Angela does live guides, and Suzette is heading the subgroup looking at how to insert the library outside the library. So what are we doing currently? I mentioned that the evaluation, environmental scan that we used in the visioning process was really a pretty high-level evaluation. So this is the time now for us to look at things more close up and do more close-up evaluation of both the systems and the implications that they hold for us, for all kinds of things, workflow, all kinds of things. We have been talking to other institutions that might have some kind of experience with some of these pilots. We have been talking with vendors, so we have been doing fact-finding. We have also been following up on the comments that came from the executive groups and also from the staff when I distributed this report to CU Live. We are developing recommendations, timelines, and resource implications about each project to discuss with the sponsors. And who are the sponsors? And Kenny, John Saylor, Oya Rieger, Scott Wicks, Janet McHugh, Lee Cartman, and Ed Weissman. And I think this is probably the time to also insert a little bit of small print. It is still possible at this point that we might find some showstoppers, although we haven't done so yet. If that should happen, the way we see these projects is that they're modular. So if one should, say, slow down or stop, the others can still go forward. Since I have all of your ears, I'd also like to ask you to mark your calendars for the Reference and Outreach Forum on November 13th, 10:30 to 12. The implementation group is going to come and present about all of these projects. Because they're kind of a special case, each one of them with a slightly different timeline, you might actually see some straw man stuff that we can start hacking at, or it might just be for other projects a verbal update. But in any case, we'd like to see as many of you there as possible. So that pretty much brings my story up to the present, and I thought that to conclude, what maybe we should do is take a very quick glance into the future. Here's to a happy ending. So since I did the presentation, these people said that we will take questions together, and that's gonna be a totally shared experience. So I, please share your thoughts, and let's start the discussion. Thank you.